From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about what happened at the Salt Lake Tribune yesterday. 34 people, reporters, editors, photographers, and other staff members, were told they were being let go. When Paul Huntsman bought the paper from a hedge fund a few years ago, there was reason to think the paper's fortunes had changed, but they didn't really. So today, we're talking about what happened and why it happened and what it means, not just for the paper, but for Utah. After this.
On the next More to Say, on December 1st, 2016, 21-year-old Madison Jensen died of heroin withdrawal in the Duchesne County Jail. She'd been violently ill, but no one in the jail did anything about it. Her death is part of a pattern, because Utah has seen more inmate deaths per capita in the last few years than any other state in the nation. And the way Utah jails are run is mostly kept secret. Download the next episode of More to Say, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. For the reporters and staff at the Salt Lake Tribune, the last few days must have been excruciating. Last Tuesday, the paper's owner, Paul Huntsman, reportedly gathered them together to say another round of layoffs were coming. And it can't be easy to break that kind of news to people, and it apparently took Huntsman nearly an hour to come right out and say it. And then it took 6 days for it to happen. Yesterday, early morning, really early, people started getting emails. Covering the story for the Tribune, Tony Simarod called it a radical restructuring of the paper. 34 employees in a newsroom staff of 90 had been let go. And this is the fourth time they've had to go through this since 2011. And apparently this was the deepest cut so far. The editor, Jennifer Napier Pierce, said the cuts are to the bone. Steve Griffin, Al Hartman, Bob Mims, Mariah Noble, Luke Ransa, Scott Summerdorf, Jay Drew. It's a long list. And that's only part of it, of course. This is a similar story happening at newspapers around the country. Circulation numbers are dropping drastically, a lot quicker than people thought. So are ad revenues. So today in the program, we're going to talk about what happened at the Tribune and what's happening elsewhere and why it's happening and what it means. I should begin by saying that Jennifer Napier Pierce was gracious enough to talk to us about what happened, give us her sense of the future for the paper. She just couldn't do it today. For obvious reasons. She has agreed to come talk to us a little bit later, and so we're going to be working out a date for that, but we felt we shouldn't wait to react to the news. So there are some things we won't be able to cover and talk about today, but we can look at this story from a broader angle, how the Tribune fits in this larger trend that seems to be going on in the country. And we can also get some personal reaction from those who are actually affected by all of this, and that's how we're going to begin today. Mike Gorell is with us in the studio, joined the Salt Lake Tribune in 1983. Lately, he's been the business reporter. Well, not lately. He's been there doing it for something like 15 years, and Mike Gorell is joining us here in the studio, and he was laid off yesterday. Welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
Ellen Fagg-Wiest is also with us. She joined the paper back in 2005, has edited the feature section, most recently was reporting on arts, theater, and local literature. And she was also laid off yesterday. And Ellen, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on my first day of job hunting.
Oh, gosh. How did you hear? You got the email, Mike?
Yeah, I got the email about, I saw it at about 6:30 sitting on my couch watching SportsCenter. And it had come about an hour earlier. I'd put off looking as long as I could. And
was that the idea, though? You were looking because you were expecting it to come?
I wasn't sure exactly how it was going to come Monday. I was expecting it Friday and was frankly hoping that it would come, the news would come Friday so that we didn't have to spend the weekend wondering what was going to happen. Yeah. And then, So I just figured I'd get on my email first thing in the morning and check to see if there was anything, word of when I figured it would be an afternoon meeting that they'd have us, because the afternoon's when most people are in the office and so they generally do things then. But saw the first two lines and said, we're going through this, and unfortunately, and that, then the line is, it was gone. But I already knew. I thought, oh, shit. Oh, sorry. That's bad news. I'm gone.
Yeah. What about you, Alan? How did you?
Jennifer sent a note on Friday saying nothing would happen the rest of the weekend. But I was sitting at home, and at my house if I don't get up early and get up quick, then there's kids involved. So I was
<Twins. laughs>
yeah. I was looking at my phone and I checked my messages first, and I got a message from my boss saying I'm out.
Yeah,
that's what she said. I'm out. And I said, I texted back and said, "How'd you know?" And she said, "Check your email." So I checked my email and I was out too.
How did you react? I mean, you just mentioned the old shoot reaction. I mean, I get that. I absolutely get that. But just give me a sense now. You've been doing this for a long time, both of you.
You know, knowing they were coming, I mean, my department has kind of been on watch since December. But knowing they were coming doesn't make it any easier. Yeah. It was hard not to have a place to go this morning, you know. I was thinking, oh, yeah, after Radio West, I have to get into the office. You know, as a reporter, you have a one-hour window.
Yep.
I've got to get the interview done so I can get back to the office, yeah. Right?
I've got a deadline.
Exactly. I'm really grateful not to be live-tweeting this. Yeah. It's really fun to not be live-tweeting.
My thoughts turn to the fact that having been there 35 years, I have a lot of stuff there, too, that I've accumulated over time. And I'm a pack rat, and I've actually donated a bunch of stuff to the university library from my coverage of the Olympics and mining disasters over the years. And so my concern was, how am I going to get all of my stuff out of there and be able to preserve it all so that I can get it to the library, that portion, and get my stuff home. And I figured that they would be gracious enough not to just have us go down to the office and get our papers and then escort us out with the police officer. And they were really good about just letting us casually mingle in the newsroom and do that and stuff. And then my main concern after that was telling my 89-year-old mother that I'd gotten laid off, because I just knew that that would devastate her.
What was it like in the newsroom when you went down there?
It was not
It was a
fun.
Morgue.
Yeah.
It was easier, I thought, for the people who'd gotten laid off than it was for the people who were remaining. They seemed to be the ones that were taking it the hardest, because, you know, and having been through it once before when we had our first big layoff, you know, you have that feelings of survivor's guilt,
yeah.
and you don't know what to say to people, and for many of us going in there, I didn't know who was or wasn't laid off. It was just a matter, you see people in there and you had to go up and, are you staying or going?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was complicated,
yeah.
Because we didn't know who had been laid off and who hadn't.
Or how big it was. And that was, for me, that was a really taxing thing over this past week was, he said, we've got 90. The rule of thumb is one for every 1,000 circulation. We have 31,000 circulation. So that's 60 people. And he said, well, I won't do that to you, but what does a businessman consider a lot of leeway above that?
Yeah.
Is 50% more would put us at 45 people and 45 cuts. Well, that's possible. But so he went to 60% and cut 40% of us. So
what is it like to live kind of under this cloud for a while? I'm guessing you sort of figure that something like this was inevitable anyway? I mean, you had a sense of what the trends were like, or did you?
We had been talking lately about the trends, particularly before the paywall. I mean, the paywall was a really crucial moment.
Would you just explain what that is? I think most people understand that the Tribune about 3 months ago set up a paywall for the
For the digital subscription,
right?
And so we knew that that was really important and really key to the success. But I mean, a newspaper is no longer a business proposition; it's something else. And so I naively sort of believe the something else part would continue.
Do you think Paul Huntsman sees it that way? Is it being something else? I mean, it seems like, Mike, from what you said a moment ago, that he's very much thinking about this as a business still.
We're not the right people to ask. You know, I mean, Paul is the owner of the paper. We've met him at Christmas parties. You know,
so assessing his...
Assessing his idea.
I think this is one of those questions that we could put to
And if I could go back to your point, I used to, when we were owned by Alden Global Financial, this hedge fund, a blood-sucking ghoul, you know, I hate them with every fiber of my body. And they, you know, they own the Denver Post too, and they ruined it. And so I was interviewed by Brady McCombs from AP for a story they were doing over in Denver about Alden and what big bad people they are. And I he asked me how it changed from going being under them and to being under the Huntsmans. And yeah, I said that I figured that under Alden, any day of the week we came into the office, we could be laid off because they were doing everything they could to hurt us. And then when the Huntsmans bought it, I had this great sense of relief that, you know, I just figured that here I am. I'm in my 60s. I'm not planning on working past 65. And I was really pessimistic about my chances of retiring as a journalist. And then the Huntsmans came along, and I was going to be able to. I was reasonably confident that I was going to be able to retire as a journalist. And I told Brady that 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago.
And so here I am today.
3 weeks ago.
A great disappointment.
Yeah. The layoffs, I wanted to get back to what you said, Ellen. I'm not sure how much more you can say about the idea that you don't think it's a business anymore. I mean, the layoffs seem to represent that a business reality. Right?
Well, I mean, we weren't operated as a business for the last year. We hired so many people. I mean, our budget was close to what it had been before. And so the sense that the paper was continuing to be the paper in the community that it is was maybe a false sense, but it was very different than the year before when Alden still owned us. We did not hire and replace positions in that way. So we were operated in the last year out of the budgets of reality.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, but I thought they were going to be more patient and understanding that it was going to be like this, that they knew that they were walking in. I think John Huntsman Sr. realized it more than Paul did.
When John Huntsman Sr. died, I think by most accounts unexpectedly, did that worry you more, Mike, for your future?
Yeah, not as much as I should have been worried. But I just knew it would be a test of his commitment. And we knew Senior's commitment was strong, but I didn't know about Paul. And my few dealings with Paul in the office, he stood up for me real strongly one time on a story that a company that I wrote about didn't like. And I was very pleased with that. I was impressed with his journalistic responsibility in that particular case. And so this kind of shook that a little bit.
Yeah. Ellen, what do you think? I think a lot of people are worried about arts coverage now, obviously, in the Tribune and other places. Your sense of it, it seems, and maybe this is an anecdotal impression, but arts coverage has been shrinking in the Tribune and other places too.
Well, I was a part-time reporter for the last 5 years, and I was the only arts reporter. Our freelance budgets for reviewers were cut back dramatically in the middle of a budget year several months ago. That was the beginning of the end. So I'm sure, I mean, there's entertainment reporters now, and I'm sure that there'll be some kind of arts coverage. But apparently arts coverage isn't as important to our readers as we like to think it is. And I'm sorry about my pronouns. I'm going to get my pronouns wrong. I'm going to say we instead of they.
People will understand for a while.
But, I mean, the page views have never been high on art stories. And if you're managed according to page views, which we've been directed to be over the last 6 months, particularly before the paywall, arts readers just do not click as often as people who are interested in the latest Gay Mormon story. They just do not.
So what do you think and maybe you don't know the answer to this. Clearly, this is the trick. What do readers want? Like, what are they clicking on? What do they want to see? And what's important to them? And how do you measure that up against the stuff that you should be covering as opposed to the stuff that readers, you know, want you to be covering? You know, how do you strike that balance?
Have
you learned about
that? I have been thinking about that for the last 14 years because that is not a problem that's unique to Salt Lake.
No.
I had that same problem in Portland. We, at the end of my time in Portland, would only review books that we were going to trash. Mm-hmm. You know, I had that same problem across the country when I worked for a web company. So, I mean, this is a problem that lots of people are trying to figure out. But I do have to say, it was really fascinating. This last weekend, my A1 story was about a book of poems by a writer, a Mormon writer, about Heavenly Mother. And the kind of response to that story versus, you know, the years of book stories I've done about local writers, about local issues, about newsy issues. I mean, it was fascinating to see that Mormon audience across the country. They tweeted, they commented, they passed it along. And my art stories just don't get that kind of attention. I'd like to think that I'm writing them in such a way that they should, but apparently not.
This may sound like a dumb question. Do you feel disappointed in people, readers? I'm not talking about about leadership at the Tribune. I mean, I'm talking about, do you feel disappointed by readers?
And you know, that's an earnest response, right? And that's a defensive response. But I have to say this and that, you know, covering the arts is something I'm passionate about. And I've done it in a really personal way. Like, I announced my engagement in a Pioneer Day essay. You know, I announced my pregnancy in a Salt Lake Acting Company review. You know what I mean? I've had this great opportunity. And to not be able to have that ability to amplify stories that I think are important. I mean, I think arts is about the meaning of life. And if you're not going to read about it in the newspaper, then we're reading about it in all these little corners, and we don't have a central place anymore to talk about it.
Mike, how are you thinking about what happens when there's a diminished kind of scrutiny of public officials and business leaders? What do you think the implications are when a paper makes a cut like this?
Well, we already have our fair share of con men and fraud artists out there operating in and outside of government and other agencies and within the business world. And without us around to really keep an eye on them, they're going to get away with a lot more stuff, because the Tribune we've always had the largest group of reporters to be able to do stuff. You guys here do good work in your limited capacity with 3 or 4 people, but we've had dozens.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that really frees you up to be able to do meaningful work. And without us available to do that, you know, the bad guys are going to run free and they'll be just so happy.
One thing you told us, Mike, is that now you have to subscribe to the paper.
Yeah, I presume so. I was really eager to find out this morning if my subscription got cut off yesterday, like my email address. And so, yeah, I'll have to subscribe and decide whether I'm going to go with the paper edition or the online or both. So,
do both.
Yeah.
Well, you both do good work. I'm really sorry.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for joining us. It's Mike Gorrell, Ellen Fag Wiest. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West from KUER.
You hear stories on KUER. They make you think and laugh. Sometimes they frustrate you, and sometimes they even make you cry. When that happens, what's the first thing you want to do? Share the story, of course. And thankfully, local stories you hear on the air wind up at KUER.org. You'll find news, podcasts, and all the Radio West you want, plus community events. When you hear a story you love, spread the love at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about what happened at the Salt Lake Tribune yesterday. 34 people, reporters, editors, photographers, other staff members, were told they were being let go. Even though the newsroom had been warned this was coming and knew the paper, of course, was struggling, it doesn't seem that anyone expected this number. When Paul Huntsman bought the paper from a hedge fund a few years ago, there was reason to think the paper's fortunes might be changing. But circulation and ad revenue, already on a downward spiral, have just kept spinning downward. So today we're talking about what happened, why it happened, and what it means, not just for the paper, but also for Utah and for other communities, by the way, that are losing reporters on the staffs of papers. Joining us now on the program is Matthew LaPlante. He's an associate professor of journalism at Utah State University. We should mention he's a former military reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. He was at the paper for 7 years, left in 2011. And Matthew, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Doug.
React. It got gut-wrenching, right? I guess that's the
It was
word.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It was absolutely heartbreaking, and no longer because I used to be there. I mean, I used to be there. I know a lot of these people, the two people who just walked out of your studio are friends of mine.
Yeah.
But because I'm a reader and because I identify myself now having lived in my present address longer than anywhere else I've ever lived in my life as a Utahn, it was heartbreaking because that paper is important to me as a Utahn.
One of the things you mentioned to us is that it was a community business, which kind of struck me. And I suppose, of course, I've always thought about it that way. I talk about it at fund drives. I talk about the importance of journalism in the Salt Lake Tribune because we have all known it's been struggling. But the idea of it being part of a community, I think, is something that seems to have struck you lately too.
Yeah, for me it's not. And especially since the Huntsman family assumed control of the paper, this idea of local control and local ownership that I think universally people say that's a good thing, right? We want our news organizations, our papers to be owned locally. But when you say that, it's not just about the journalism. That's a business. You know, it's not a whole lot different than a car dealership or a grocery store chain. And if you had a local car dealership, if the Miller dealership here in Utah that, you know, has car lots all over this valley went out of business, our hearts would be broken. We would feel bad for not necessarily the Miller family, but we feel bad for all the employees and our connection to the community. And that's what I'm feeling right now with this. This is a local business. It's not any different than if a grocery store chain that was owned locally went out of business. A lot of people are out of work today.
What are the trolls saying? I mean, you're
saying the horrible things that trolls always say.
Yeah, always. Yeah. But I just wonder what you make of that, because this is the one thing you've commented on, that just the kind of crappy stuff that people say, yeah, and insensitive stuff. But I'm wondering if you see something larger there, like some kind of sentiment in it.
I do. And the thing that I see is this really pervasive othering of journalists, this tendency on the part of – and it's not just trolls.
No.
It is a tendency on the part of a lot of people to hear the word journalist and go, those people are somehow inhuman, they're subhuman. You know, we've known for a long time that journalism as a profession is way down on the kind of like the respectability and trust level. That is a result of us not telling our story very well. I really believe that. Even so, people don't talk about used car dealers the way they talk with the kind of the visceral hate and contempt that they talk about journalists. And 34 people lost their jobs yesterday, and the social media like threw a party, you know, like sometimes responding to tweets of Salt Lake Tribune staffers announcing their layoffs. Like celebrating in response that there are fewer liberals and or conservatives. And that's the interesting thing. It came from both sides, which to me is an ironic kind of really good indicator that the Tribune's actually doing its job because it's pissing off everybody.
Yeah. So I wanted to have you help me kind of break down what you think may have happened. When Paul Huntsman purchased the paper, does everyone agree that they saved it? Is that fair to say?
What is happening to the other Alden property papers right now?
Hedge fund that owned these others.
Correct. Yeah. Is going to be far more devastating in the long run than what happened yesterday. And what happened yesterday was devastating.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
Alden doesn't have any intention of running these papers long term. It will squeeze them dry of every penny it can. It will figure out how to make profits on them. And when it can make no more profits on them, it will leave them in ruin. And it did that here. That's an important thing to say here as well. Is what the Huntsman family bought was a shell of what the Tribune was. The building had been sold. The right and the printing press had been sold. Future profits had been sold for cash that was taken away from this community.
Not really any assets to speak of.
More assets. The name is the asset. That's it. Like they rent their building at the Gateway. They don't own the printing press anymore. The old printing press that they used to own downtown is now, my understanding, it's in Russia, printing papers. They don't have anything left. They just have their name. That's the only thing of value. And I think it's valuable, but there's not a whole lot left to sell.
But it says something that the family bought it.
Right. They could have opened the Huntsman Times, right? They could, if they wanted to run a newspaper, it's not hard to open a journalism organization anymore, right? All it takes is a website and some staff. They bought the Tribune because they had a commitment to the Tribune, to the idea of that as an institution that has value that has been earned over, what, 140 some odd years of life in this community.
So here's another reaction that I was seeing from comments and others, and I wanted to get your sense of it, because it seems like there are two parts to this reaction. One is that Paul Huntsman ran this operation into the ground, couldn't figure it out.
I think that's not completely unfair. I mean, he's had a couple of years, and he look, nobody's figured this out.
Yeah.
Right? But the guy in the white hat who came in on the horse didn't figure it out either. So to say there's no responsibility on his part, that this is only a result of, you know,
the business realities.
This is newspapers being newspapers, and this is the reality of he bought something with the intention of keeping it alive, and part of it died yesterday. So that's in part, that's fair.
Yeah. So here's the other part to it then. So it seems like that when the Huntsmans bought it, when Paul Huntsman bought it, there was this decision they could make, and maybe help me out with this. You either run this paper and treat it like a business, or you take another tack and you say, look, it's not really working as a business. We are wealthy philanthropists. We have a lot of money. We can kind of run this as a nonprofit and not expect to make a lot of money at it. Was that the decision that they had in some ways? Because it seems like where they went is with the business.
Yesterday was a pretty good sign that what they've decided to do is to continue to try to run this with business values in mind. The Huntsman family is the richest family in the state. Certainly, if they wanted to treat it as a charity, they could. They could lose money on it. A lot of it would be a tax write-off, I assume. I think that Paul, and I don't know Paul. I've met him once or twice. But my sense is that he wants to demonstrate that he can run it as a business, that that's still a model that's viable. Mm-hmm. And that family also has a very entrenched set of business values,
yep.
Right?
Like, yep.
Dad worked his way up. His book is called From Barefoot to Billionaire, right? I mean, like, that's something that I'm sure Paul feels like he wants to prove that he can do. I don't know that it's doable. And I think Paul has acknowledged that it's not doable at the level of the Tribune, of the level of staffing that the Tribune had before.
But can you go back and say, all right, I don't think it's going to work as a business. Let's now plow some of the family money into it and make it work. Because, and this is the language you heard from the Huntsman family throughout, not just Paul Huntsman, but you got this from John Huntsman Sr. also. They're committed to there being an independent voice in this state.
Right.
And so that was an absolute value that they seemed to share. Is there any go? And maybe there is, but is there any? Do you sense that there's a way to go back at some point and say this isn't working as a business, so we need to come at it in a different way?
Yeah, and I don't. I mean, like I'm sure there's a lot of paperwork involved,
yeah.
Right? But
yeah.
I don't have any doubt. Like if you wanted to run the Salt Lake Tribune or any other newspaper as a foundation, right? Like endow the thing with a few hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's easy for me to say, I don't have a few hundred millions of dollars. Thank God I ruined myself in this community. But, you know, you could endow a paper. Now, that might be part of their long-term plans. I don't know. I'm not in that room.
Yeah.
But right now it sure seems like they're going to continue to try to run it as a business. And maybe not one that makes anything, but one that sustains itself. It wasn't doing that before.
You get a sense, and I'm not sure how much of this is just trying to put on a brave face for now, but Paul Huntsman has said that he, for the first time in a while, he sees a way forward for the paper. What do you make of that?
I want to believe that.
Yeah.
I think Paul Huntsman believes that. I don't doubt his earnestness. I don't think he's trying to pull one on the community. But I've heard that language before, and I've heard it from every editor in chief who's announced layoffs at every paper where I've worked or I've had friends who've worked. This gives us a way forward. This gives us a way forward. And then 6 months, a year, 2 years, 4 years down the road, we get another round of layoffs.
Yeah.
I haven't stopped believing. I haven't stopped hoping, but I've heard it before.
How much of this was the Tribune's own fault? The quality of the website is something that people grumbled about until they tried to make some fixes there, obviously, and did. Was the paywall a mistake?
I think that you can't take the blame away from the Tribune for some of what has happened. I don't think that the Tribune itself has done anything that has been a greater self-inflicted wound than the industry as a whole has done to itself. Website.
Meaning what? They should have established a business model early on in the digital age because that.
We addicted people to getting their news for free. Yeah. And we never asked them to pay for it until it was way too late. That happened in the industry as a whole, and it decimated the newspaper industry. You talk about like the transfer from paper to digital, and how that shook things up and disrupted the whole thing. But the fact is that newspaper owners, by and large, in the mid to late 1990s, decided we are going to give our product away for free and hope that a business model emerges from that. And that was a horrible – I mean, when we write the history of this time, that's going to go down as one of the colossal joint failures of an entire industry.
We're going to get back to this question of business models and those kinds of things because we have a guest coming up who's going to help us work through some of that as well. Let me ask you – another particular question about this situation. What do we know about the relationship with the Deseret News and what kind of influence that may have had on what is happening and what has happened to the Tribune?
I mean, we don't know a lot about what the discussions are behind closed doors. We do know that that Paul Huntsman has been talking to the Deseret News. We know that it's been intention of him and of his to continue to work out a joint operating agreement that works for both entities.
Are they operating in good faith as far as you can tell?
Different people will tell you different things. I tend to think so. I don't think that the Deseret News has a great interest in seeing the Salt Lake Tribune go away.
Well, they need the Trib as much as the Trib needs them, don't they?
I think so. And in fact, I think even more so because the Deseret News is read primarily by a Mormon audience. There's some carryover. There's some overlap. But primarily the Deseret News has a Mormon audience. Utah is not in its entirety Mormon. And the Salt Lake Tribune's audience is much more crossover. It's yeah. Mormons. It's not non-Mormons.
I have to say it is that cultural dynamic is interesting when you look at it. It seems to me, and this is maybe, again, an anecdotal impression, but that people who read the Trib or many people who read the Trib are expecting coverage that is critical of the dominant culture in some ways. There's certainly a way of scrutinizing them in a way you wouldn't hear from a paper owned by the LDS
sure,
Church.
Sure, yeah. And likewise, I mean, I don't read the Salt Lake Tribune for coverage of the Huntsman Cancer Center, right? I don't have any examples of where they've screwed that coverage up. But yeah. Think about ownership. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. There's really not. But the Tribune gives both the Deseret News and I think the LDS Church a degree of legitimacy that doesn't exist if the Tribune doesn't exist, right? Like if the Tribune doesn't exist, like all those people saying this valley, this state is a theocracy are a little more right if the dominant media voice in the community is also run by the church.
Yeah.
And so
if they don't have someone like Peggy Fletcher Stack.
Yes. Nice to have Peggy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like for the church, it's nice to have Peggy. There's a reason they still talk to her after all of these years. You know, she helps give the church legitimacy by sometimes holding their feet to the fire, often holding their feet to the fire.
Yeah. So what happens now? You have I don't know how many are left on the ground reporters. I was looking at, we were talking with Mike Gorrell. He talked about something like 4 on features and 3 now on justice. 4 reporters, I hope this is right, on government, like 4 people to cover federal government and city government and county government and state government. And, I mean, this is difficult.
Yeah, you triage.
Triage.
It's what they've done before. It's what they'll continue to do. They'll make a decision about what's most important, and they'll make a decision about what gets clicks. And those things are not the same thing. And the Tribune has been making – all newspapers do this, right? You do not make money by sending a reporter to a city council meeting. That costs you money. There's just not enough clicks that pay for city council coverage. But that's something that newspapers have done as a public service for decades. So they'll triage. They'll cover what they can cover. They'll do the best that they can, and they'll await a better day.
Matthew LaPlante is with us. He's an associate professor of journalism at Utah State University. Joining us now is Ken Doctor, a media analyst, a consultant and speaker, wrote Newsonomics, 12 New Trends That Will Shape the News You Get. He runs the book's companion website, Newsonomics, and he's joining us today by phone from his home in Santa Cruz, California. And Ken Doctor, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being
with
us.
Good morning.
Well, so I guess let me just begin by saying, I mean, the idea that you had a local owner connected to the community feel strongly about a newspaper as an institution, buys it from a hedge fund owner, but it doesn't seem to have worked right now. How are you reacting to just that part of this story?
Unfortunately, I've seen this movie before. The act of buying and the hope is the price of admission, in a sense. That's the first step. And, of course, when especially a newspaper is rescued from a company like Alden, which was pretty accurately characterized by Mike earlier on,
yeah.
People have hope. But it's a game I call billionaire bingo, that it depends which billionaire you get. If you get Jeff Bezos at the Washington Post, or perhaps John Henry at the Boston Globe, these are billionaires, but they're willing to spend a lot of money, and they're willing to give it a lot of time. And that, though, there are critical ingredients here beyond the buying and the rescuing, and it is financial capacity. Mm-hmm. It is time, which buys time to make a transition, which is still at least 3 to 5 years away for many of these businesses. And then it's importantly strategy and vision. So the whole print-to-digital transformation, which went nowhere under the previous ownership and put the Huntsman's behind the eight ball, mm-hmm. needs to be figured out. And as we see in Salt Lake, the paywall just went up 3 months ago in 2018, which is way late. Now, it could have had a better result, but it would take more investment and it would take more time.
You heard Mike say, I think diplomatically, I wish they had been a little more patient.
Right.
Was he right?
Yeah, he's right. And he's right not just in a civic mission sense, which is the important difference, right, between with car dealerships and newspapers. But he's right in terms of the business. It's kind of business 101. You take over a business that is flagging. It has problems. And you say, okay, what do I need to do, and what's realistic? So not only Jeff Bezos at the big Washington Post, which is somewhat similar and somewhat different, but you could take the Berkshire Eagle in Western Massachusetts, and there 4 civic-minded business people bought that paper and 2 smaller ones from the same company, Digital First Media,
yeah.
about the same time. And I have talked to them, and they will say this is a 5-year this transition at least. And they are funding it. They did the right thing there, too, and they added back to the reporting staff. But they are seeing it is a tough slog, but so far they are continuing their reinvestment. So it does take patience, and it is a business, and businesses take reinvestment sometimes. 2 years, and what I've seen reported is $1 million of reinvestment is simply not enough.
Can any newspaper be run like a business, given the difficulty of the business model these days? The fact that readers are conditioned to receive information for free, the ad revenue realities. I mean, is it too early to say? I mean, can it work?
It can, and it is in certain places, and it's relatively few places that are actually stable. The best example is the Minneapolis Star Tribune in the Twin Cities, and there we have a newsroom of more than 220, including newer, younger people with more digital skills and veteran reporters and columnists, and that paper is making profit in the mid-single digits. And it is stable. It is a close to flat in revenue, which is just incredible these days compared to the kind of losses we're seeing in Salt Lake and other places. But again, you go back to how did they do that, and you get back to they, too, were bought by a billionaire, a man named Glenn Taylor, the wealthiest man in Minnesota. Very parallel story. But he stayed the course. He modestly reinvested. And he put a new strategy into place, and they are making a success of it. There are other papers around the country that are stable, relatively stable, even though they are hit by the same kind of pressures of print ad loss as in Salt Lake.
Is there any I'm not sure how you would know this, but is there any qualitative difference between the readers of the Star Tribune in Minneapolis and the readers of the Salt Lake Tribune, for example? Is that part of the distinction, that there may be more of some kind of a commitment by readers to read a paper or contribute to a paper?
Well, clearly there's a game of numbers, right, where we have simply a significantly larger metropolitan area and a great sense of civic mission. That is true. That is more true, and I actually lived in the Twin Cities 20 years ago. That is more true. Yet in other cities, there are plenty of people like that, including probably most of the people listening to KUER. And so the question is, are there enough of them? And then how do you produce a product that they're going to be willing to pay for now more in digital, but if they're in print, to continue in print? It is clearly made more difficult in Salt Lake by the fact that there are two papers and that the slice of people who want the kind of journalism the Tribune has done is smaller than it would be in the Twin Cities.
Hmm. So let me mention some numbers, and you tell me, put it in perspective. So for the Tribune, apparently something like 40% in losses in ad and circulation numbers.
Right.
How does that compare to other communities, other papers in the rest of the country?
It's the highest number I've heard. Hmm. And it's quite a curious number. While there's a decline in both volume and revenue in terms of circulation sales, which is largely subscription now, and print advertising is going down everywhere, most of these numbers for a two-year period in advertising would be about in the 20 to 25% range nationally. And circulation would vary, but circulation is largely flat to down maybe 5%. So these numbers are really curious numbers, and I wonder, and I haven't gotten into it in terms of reporting, how the change in the joint operating agreement has played into that. My understanding is that the Morning News now got control of the circulation and advertising business as part of the last changes in the JOA. Because I've not seen these kinds of losses, especially in circulation, and especially given the at least modest restaffing of the Tribune. So it could be the term, it could be how circulation is run, what kind of changes were done there, or it could be simply very poor execution on somebody's part of actually selling and retaining subscribers, for instance, getting the paper delivered to people, you know, on their driveways at the right hour.
Yeah.
But something is radically wrong there. And I briefly looked at, I have access to the circulation numbers. It doesn't look to me like the Morning News is down by at all those same percentages, although the reporting on it is not as transparent as it could be. So that really does make me wonder those really high numbers.
Matthew, any insight on why that might be?
I don't have specific insight on why that might be, but I have some pretty, I think, educated guesses. And Ken just hit on one of them, which is it's service, right? People don't actually cancel their subscriptions when they're angry at coverage nearly as much as we think they do. That the whole like pick up the phone, cancel my subscription. It happens, but it doesn't happen as often as
when they throw it in the bushes.
When they throw it in the bushes, yeah. When they screw up billing, when they, and one of the things. So I'm a subscriber. I'm a longtime subscriber to the Salt Lake Tribune. A few years ago, I renewed my subscription. Then my credit card got stolen. KUER, who I also donate to, calls me right away when my credit card doesn't go through. Utah Public Radio, which I donate to, calls me right away when my credit card doesn't go through. Salt Lake Tribune never did. And I never heard, like, my subscription just disappeared. It just went away. That was it. And I held off. It was just a digital subscription. So I held off for a while because there wasn't a paywall then, just to see how long it would go. And it went months and months and months. And I finally had to, I voluntarily went back to being a subscriber. There's nobody there to hold me accountable as a subscriber. I think that's a clue as to what happened.
What about content, Ken Doctor? What can papers do to maintain their journalistic integrity, to keep, you know, a critical eye on leaders and on arts, and yet still get the clicks? I mean, how do you manage that balance? What do readers want?
So the way the best newspapers and the best business practices are working out on that question has really changed. And so it's a great movement in the last 5 years, really, beyond clicks. Clicks were the currency when digital advertising was supposed to counter the loss of print advertising and save the newspaper industry, and that was pre-paywall. And as I think as Matthew summed up, it was a disaster. Yes. Now, 65% of American dailies have paywalls. And what they find, and the companies that do the analytics, the data analysis for them, is that the revenue increase is not based on sheer volume of clicks, but really focusing on the top 10% of the users. Usually, for any newspaper, the top 10% of the people coming every month will consume more than 50% of the pages, a huge number.
Wow.
And these, of course, are the ones you are most likely to get to subscribe, and especially digitally. So you really want to know what it is they are clicking on, even though they're a relatively small percentage of the audience. That takes, also, there's reinvestment there. You have to understand that first. You've got to look at those. You've got to gather those numbers, analyze them. And it usually isn't, of course, there's going to be a big kind of sensational story. But otherwise, we find in a lot of the analytics that the people who subscribe like civic coverage.
Hmm.
They understand that government coverage is important, and they will stay with the paper accordingly. And so it is a profound change, but again, there's a number of moving parts. You got to understand that first, then you got to figure out who those 10% are. And the really good news out of that, if you have the right owner with money and patience, is it is often the core mission kind of work that these people understand and they'll pay for.
Hmm. This goes back to the importance of investing. Because if you diminish your cadre of, you know, copy editors and photographers and people who really create value for some of the, let alone reporters, of course, and if you diminish that in some way, that's going to affect the trust that that core audience you're talking about is going to have, and it's just going to continue the downward cycle, I guess.
Exactly. It is a deepening downward spiral, and it's both a loss of trust. But it's also a loss of service, right? Where older readers, and who are mainly the subscribers, they'll look at the newspaper and say, like, it's just not there anymore. Or I know a number of well-known people were laid off in this last layoff. Well, they noticed that. And the idea that they can do this cut of 30-plus and kind of cut their way to stability doesn't work. It hasn't worked anywhere. Unless they had a plan to once again inject some money and time into it and rebuild, but I don't see that. And you can't cut your way to the future either as a consumer proposition or as a civic mission.
Matthew, you say a student texted you this week and asked if it's still worth trying to become a journalist. How did you react?
I had a lot of students who
is that right?
I've had a lot of conversations with students in the last 24 hours, and what I tell them is this: I don't know when newspapers will take their last breath, but I do know that it's going to happen sooner if we don't have good people going to work for newspapers. And they still play a vital role in our community. I see a transformation. I see opportunities for social media and for civic journalism, citizen journalism, to fill some of the gaps that the slow demise of newspapers has created. But those gaps aren't filled yet. And so I still encourage my students. It's going to be tough, and you're going to be fighting what might feel like an unwinnable fight, but it's a good fight. It really is. And the Tribune's part of that fight. It's a good newspaper. They're doing great work over there. They published a series just a couple of weeks ago about mental health issues for police officers. And it's I have a former student who's a police officer. He said it changed his life. There's good work being done over there, and it deserves to continue.
Ken, we're essentially out of time, but what's your sense of all of that? You feel that same kind of cautious optimism?
Right. I mean, and when you look at both the communities and individual readers in this country want news, they're reading news. They have not, in many communities, been offered the opportunity to pay for news that is substantial and growing and confident and going forward. And so I, too, am optimistic that once this can be figured out and offered to them, and there are many more experiments in the planning stage that I know about, that we will find a model. The question is how low we're going to go down on civic knowledge or, as Mike said, the bad guys getting away with stuff until we get to that point.
Ken Doctor, media analyst, president of Newsonomics, joined us from his home in Santa Cruz. Ken, thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
And Matthew LaPlante, Associate Professor of Journalism at Utah State University. Thanks very much to you.
Thanks, Doug.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.